This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Looking for love, pro wrestling love, that is, you've come to the right place. This is volume number 9 of the Pro Wrestling Love series, episode number 4 of the greatest WCW Jim Crockett promotion matches of all time. I am your host, Marty Sleaze, aka Superstar Sleaze, on the Pro Wrestling Only forums and Twitter. I'm joined today by Justin, aka JK Webb, on the PWO forums, and Milky Way Champ on Twitter. We want to thank the Place to Be Nation, not just for hosting this podcast, but also for hosting the voting for the greatest WCW matches of all time. And we are looking forward to seeing how the voting shakes out. We have entered the top 25, the cream of the crop, the elite of the elite. And it is so big, it is so badass that we had to break this up into two episodes. That's right, two episodes. So we are only doing numbers 25 through number 11 on this podcast series, so you'll have to wait just a little bit longer to get into that top 10, and we hope you enjoy this podcast. And we're back with our fourth part of our top 100 greatest WCW matches of all time. That means we're in the elite of the elite, the top 25 of the top 100. I'm joined by Justin, JK Webb on the PWO forums, and Milky Way Champ on Twitter. I am Marty Sleaze, Superstar Sleaze on Twitter and the PWO forums. How you doing today, Justin?
Man, I'm excited to talk about our top 25. I had no idea how hard this was going to be. Once you get into the top 25, trying to figure out what order these things can go in is pretty... It's a task.
It's not. You know, I enjoy reviewing my reviews, and it actually, like, really helps me. Because what I did was I actually just kind of laid them out 100 kind of based on gut, and then I would review my reviews, and I was like, oh, man, I'm lowballing this. We got to move this up, you know, stuff like that. So I'm really happy that I take the time and write my detailed reviews. They are helpful.
And I'll tell you, this this little stinger, Marty, he's excited.
Oh, man. There's a lot to...
What timing for us to record our top 25 when the man himself returned to the ring on TNT just last night.
With Tony Schiavone doing the call.
Fantastic.
See, aren't you glad I pushed out our recording session to Thursday? Because
I knew.
The Tony, Cody called me. I have like a direct line to Cody.
Yeah, I'm always he wanted stoked. You to keep it secret, and I appreciate that as a fan. I don't like spoilers, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, your story about how you needed to watch Dynamite before we started recording was pretty funny. So I'm glad that you were a fan of professional wrestling.
Well, I'll just say this. I was, and I know we have a lot to talk about, so I'll make it quick. But basically, I was laying in the floor of my kids' room. They are 7 and 5, and I usually lay in there for a few minutes to get them settled so they can fall asleep. And I got a text from somebody, and it just said, "Are you watching Dynamite?" And there's just something inside me, the little stinger the little stinger came alive. And I just thought to myself, is Sting on Dynamite? But then I was like, I don't want to spoil it for myself. And granted, nobody spoiled anything. Somebody just texted me and said, are you watching Dynamite? That's it. So I was like, I'm staying off Twitter. Don't say anything was kind of my response back. And so then I'd already promised my wife that we would watch this Christmas episode of Modern Family. And so, you know, I go into the room, and of course, all I can think about is Sting. And she's talking about Christmas Modern Family, and we watched the episode, but I'm just chanting Sting in the back of my head the entire time. And then she falls asleep. And so then I get on my phone to watch Dynamite. And so then I start talking myself out of it, because then I want to be surprised. So I'm like, it's not Sting, it's Shaq. You know, it's Shaquille O'Neal, or they've signed somebody crazy. It's somebody completely different. You know, it's Roman Reigns. He showed up. That's crazy. What? You know, and so then, but then it's like so late at night, and I don't want to fast forward because I don't know when this thing's going to happen. So I'm like trying to stay awake watching this, like, you know, watching Dynamite, trying to stay awake. Eventually I get to the Cody match, and I'm like, okay, this, you know, whatever happened is going to happen here. And of course, the lights went out, and it was pure magic. I love the Tony call, like, yeah. So, but anyway, I just thought, man, what great timing, you know, as we break down this top 25.
I think you won the triple crown that night. You won Father of the Year, Husband of the Year, and Sting Fan of the Year for your commitment to all the important people in your life.
That's right.
All right, it's only, well, we usually I start off, right?
That's right, yeah.
And, well, it's only fitting that I start off with my number 25, which also pays off our cliffhanger from the previous episode, because my number 25 is WCW World Champion Diamond Dallas Page versus Sting from Nitro, April 26, 1999.
Man, that's awesome, because I feel like I'll be okay moving it up to this spot.
You'll be okay moving up to 24?
Well,
I want to know what your 24 is now, but we'll get there.
We'll get there, and you can see if you can talk me into it. We'll have to see, but I feel like I can at least slide it into 25. We'll have to see though. But that's okay. That's why I tagged you. I don't know if you noticed today on Twitter. That's why I tagged you, because DDP posted a picture from this match and was welcoming Sting back to TNT.
Yeah, I mean, it is truly great timing, because, it's a great match. It's the best match. Yeah, I would say pretty definitively the best match in Nitro history.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of like why it held so much. Well, the match itself is why it holds so much weight for me. But I think an additional reason to why it would rank so high for me on a list like this is, like, you know, Nitro is definitely the biggest show that they had audience wise for WCW. And Sting versus DDP 4/26/1999 is without a doubt, in my opinion, the best match in Nitro history.
Yeah, and I think that's a pretty crazy thing to say, given the fact that when people think of great matches, they think of like the Cruiserweights and Benoit and Eddie. And not to say they didn't have great matches, they did, but I think DDP and Sting won that battle. So, I think what really stands out to me is this was just like DDP, like sort of at the peak of his powers with a very motivated Sting. And I kind of, if you ever read any of my reviews from 1998, I'm pretty harsh on the Stinger, but in this match in 1999, he was back to beating the franchise. He had a lot of pep in his step.
I remember when I watched it, I felt like it just kind of hit me out of nowhere.
You know, I also watched this live, and I also remember thinking this was really good. I can still remember the taping it on VHS and like putting in the tape the next day and being like, it was really good. And I remember really being interested in the DDP heel turn, even though it kind of felt a little forced, but it was interesting.
Yeah. And I actually, what do you think about the Spring Stampede match? We don't want to deviate too far, but I was just curious.
Yeah. I've watched it once, because I wasn't a big into asking my parents to buy pay-per-views for me. So I watched it once, like a couple years ago. It's kind of weird. Savage is the special guest referee. Yeah, it's a great collection of wrestlers, but I think I actually did like it a good amount, especially because I don't really like Fatal 4-Ways, but I remember enjoying it.
Yeah, it's a pretty fun match if nobody's ever seen it. Because I think, I don't know, I would say it's probably a little underrated because I think that most people or that I've seen kind of don't really either don't talk about it or say it's not very good. But I think it's pretty good. It's pretty entertaining. It's cool to see DDP win the title.
Yeah, it is cool. I mean, he really deserved it. Like I said, he was definitely the hardest working man in the main event scene from 97 on. So he definitely deserved it. And I think what's interesting is he did it. I mean, the most memorable version of DDP is the, you know, the diehard babyface, you know, with the injured ribs, right? Always battling the NWO. I think it was such a great thing that he never joined the NWO when everybody else did at some point. You know, he stayed true to rejecting that. But then turning heel, like the thing is, going back, because I only started watching in 97, like I told you, going back and watching heel DDP from 95, 96, he's a great heel, like a total scuzzball, really good at bumping, really good at shying the babyface. And the cool thing here was that, like I said, Sting was super motivated. He looked like the franchise again. Also, they had a ridiculously hard Fargo crowd because I don't think wrestling's ever been in Fargo. I can't remember the last time it was. And this crowd was molten for them. And it was just this awesome feedback loop where the crowd got hot, the wrestlers were vibing off the crowd, and that only made the crowd hotter. And it was just like, it was just so great. And it really blew off in a great way. I love that they teased the finishes early in the match. That's a DDP's specialty in a lot of his matches. To me, it really shows. I love that type of stuff. It shows the wrestlers are invested. The finish could happen at any time. Both men are thinking about winning early. They're not trying to like just drag it out. I love that stuff. And then the low blow on the 10 count, he's a scummy heel. I love that as a transition. It's a vicious heat segment. And then they do just an awesome finish stretch. I love when he goes for the diamond cutter, Sting hooks the ropes, DDP bumps on his own, and they just go to this crazy huge finish stretch, again, a DDP staple at the time that a lot of main eventers didn't have. And Sting's just throwing out, you know, tombstones and stuff. And then
the reversing tombstones.
Right. He loved the tombstone reversal. And then I bet you love the finish, right? I think that's such a great finish when he does the scorpion deathlock out of the corner. He kind of walks out and then drops him.
Yeah, it's really cool.
it's a awesome victory.
The crowd flips out.
Crowd goes nuts. Don't they do something silly like Sting loses it the same night or something?
It's hard to remember. It's hard to remember. I know that I feel like that this is a night where there are multiple matches between people.
Yeah, but
like Sting, I think that there's a multiple match thing going on that night. But it's been a while since I've watched the full episode.
Yeah, but the match itself is just, it's Clash of the Titans done just as well.
Oh,
as
it's so good.
And I still contend, like, I was just listening to Kevin Sullivan's podcast on the Finger Poke of Doom. It really wasn't that eye-opening. It wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. But that being said, I still think that between March and April of 1999, WCW could have pulled out of their death spiral. They were started building some positive momentum, and Nitro was actually pretty good in those 2 months. It was when Team Madness came in. I love Randy Savage, my second favorite wrestler after Ric Flair, but Team Madness wasn't too hot. And then the White Hummer started, and then it was just then Russo just killed it. But yeah, this was pretty much the last great month in WCW history.
Yeah, one of the last great matches too.
Yeah. I think for a lot of people. I think the only match that I had that was chronologically later than this match was the Bret Benoit match.
Oh yeah.
Other than that,
I think I think Mysterio has a couple of good ones that I've seen later on too. But yeah, this is a good one for sure. They're throwing bombs, reversing tombstones. It's a blast.
Oh yeah, it's awesome. That's the other thing. It's like it's nonstop action. It's a very efficient match. So. Good stuff. Anyway, so what's your number 25? What is your number 25 so that we can find out what Sting and DDP is replacing?
All right. So yeah, we're gonna have to talk about it and see what you think, but it's Ric Flair versus Terry Funk, 11/15/1989 from Clash of the Champions. Yeah, I mean, when you get to this, it's hard to say. It's hard to say that match at 25, and when you get to this part of the list, I think that, you know, the match that I have coming up after it, I can state a pretty good reason why I think it would be higher. And I guess once you get this far into great matches, this kind of thing happens. But basically, Ric Flair forced Terry Funk to say "I quit" on the microphone due to the pain of the figure four leg lock.
Five letters, two words, brother.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, they brawl all over the arena. They're beating each other to a pulp with a microphone. It's just so hard hitting. You know, Flair's busted open pretty early. Funk, I think, when you know, has a pretty unpredictable brawling style that I always think matches up really well with Flair. And he has the mic and he's smashing it into Flair's head. And Flair gets busted open, and then they take it into the ring, and I remember Funk is punching Flair in the head, and he's just shouting, you know, bring me that microphone, bring me that microphone, say it, Flair, you egg-sucking dog. And then he's he's just slapping him in the face, and pretty much the majority of the first part of the match is Funk beating down Flair and telling him that he should quit before he injures him. And then, of course, I love the spot when Flair finally starts to fire back and he slides Funk across the table into the chair. And I think that Funk's selling of the leg throughout once, you know, Flair goes on the attack of that is really awesome. He's like hobbling around. But when he gets him in the figure four, he's like, my leg is breaking, you know, I quit. It's, you know, it's an awesome match. And then of course the post-match is really cool. I think it's a really cool moment when Funk, he stands up and he's like, I'm going to shake your hand, Flair. You're the better man. Do you remember that part?
Yeah.
Like, yep. Right after he like stands up and he's like, you're the better man. I was like, and then of course Gary Hart kicks Funk in the knee, and then Flair jumps hard, and then Muda comes out, and Sting comes out, and eventually Lex Luger comes out, and I remember Luger breaks some trophies at the end of the ramp. But the post match is super entertaining too, but the match itself is just a really awesome brawl, and I feel really weird saying it's 25. And then also on top of that, I guess you have it ranked higher than Sting and DDP because you haven't said it yet, but I'm gonna guess it's on your list. So I feel like I may have to put Sting and DDP at 26.
I don't know, man. I mean, I think – so I do have Flair Funk I Quit match higher. But, like, I think you can justify anything, you know, once you get to this and let the chips fall as they may. I mean, I think you brought up a lot of great points. The other insults I like besides the egg-sucking dog one, which I always have loved, is he's hollering at him, remember the wreck, remember your neck, before he pile drives
him. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And Flair is just so good at hollering and screaming in pain while he's grabbing his neck. And like you said, so many good brawling spots that are like so iconic, like, you know, Funk sliding across the table head first into the chair, and Flair jumping on Funk's back, you know, all those crazy, like, out of control things that they're both nuts, and they're just, they do have great chemistry together. So for me, this was actually my favorite match for a really, really long time as a kid.
And I guess I broke the rule and talked about it before we got to it on your list. We'll do that going forward. I'll make sure that we'll wait until it pops up for you or vice versa.
No worries, man. You were an eager beaver, and that's okay, man. You're talking about one of the greatest matches of all time. So I figure I might as well I'll just tell my little story about it, and then I'll just say the number when I say the number. But the it was Christmas of 2003. I just got back into wrestling. I took pretty much all of 2002 off, and like just like my whole childhood, reading like WrestleLine.com or looking at ProWrestlingHistory.com or WrestleTitles.com, all these different websites, and just reading about how Ric Flair was the greatest of all time. But, you know, I was a fan in 98 and 99. Not to say he had his moments, but he wasn't as great as he was in the past. Then in 2003, when WWE started launching the DVD sets and they launched the Ric Flair one, I've never wanted something so bad for Christmas. And this would probably break my parents' heart, but I don't remember a single thing I ever got for Christmas before Christmas 2003. But, man, I wanted that DVD set so bad. It was like everything I had read about finally coming to life. And this was like, this was the match of the DVD set that I just loved. I thought it was the craziest thing ever. So
that's really kind of how, that's kind of how I was too with Flair. I would say that probably until the DVD set, I didn't really understand it when people called him the greatest of all time. Cause I guess like my prime wrestling fandom when I was younger was, we talked about early, way back, was the WWF. And of course I remember Sting when I was a kid, but barely. And then of course, when I got into wrestling again, by then it was, you know, mid to late 1996 and on. And so you hear, you know, I'd heard about Flair match, some of the great Flair matches and stuff, but a lot of that stuff, just like you, I guess I didn't see until the Flair DVD came out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a huge revelation. I mean, Flair to me as a kid was the crazy old man who would take off his clothes in the middle of the ring. Yeah. Like, and it seems like totally unscripted when he did. It probably was. He probably just started taking off his clothes because that's who he is, and knee drop and all that stuff. He was a right. Howl, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, but, he was really entertaining, but he didn't look, I would say that by that time, you know, in comparison to some of the guys that were super over, he didn't seem as intimidating.
No, he didn't.
To me, when I was in high school, and of course now when I go back, even in like that time in like 96 or 97, I still see Flair as competitive and everything else. But when I was in high school or like eighth grade or so, you know, I kind of saw him as more entertaining than I guess you could say intimidating.
Exactly. Yeah. I agree with you there. All right. So that means we're moving on to my 24, which is another great down home Southern Fried brawl. You might have this higher because I don't think I heard you say it yet. But it's been a couple days since we recorded. It's Dustin Rhodes versus Bunkhouse Buck from Spring Stampede '94.
Yes, I did have that on my list. So
it's already been said. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, this match, I remember this match coming out of nowhere for me. It always kind of had a rep online, but then I saw it. It was just this is like peak Dustin. There's a lot of people that we are in our forum that are Dustin fanboys, and I think this is really what you got to point to is Dustin sort of like this is his peak singles run, and it really he sets the tone by the big leap off the ramp over the top rope and just tackling Buck. And he is just on fire this whole time. He's just whooping Buck's ass. Buck's doing a good job selling, but it's just Dustin all the way. And what I like about this match a lot is it's just so Southern. You know, you have like the handkerchief choking from Robert Fuller. You have this like weird stick that gets shattered and like goes flying into the crowd. You have Dustin bleeding wearing a white Texas shirt. You got powder, you got belts and belt buckles and cowboy boots. And so even though this is on the same card as the Nasties versus Cactus Jack and the ECW brawl, they still feel really different and distinct. This actually feels like one of the last US Southern brawls. And I just love the big Dustin finish run. He does the bionic elbows and he adds a crotch thrust. You get the bulldog and you get like the whole crowd super pumped for him. But unfortunately, Fuller distracts and hands the knuckle dusters to Bunko's Buck. But it is just like the perfect like Southern bloody brawl. Just really awesome.
I couldn't agree with you more. And what a card, too.
I'm going second best card. Well, I'll talk maybe a little bit about best card. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the best for sure. And one thing I'll say is I agree with like everything you said. That's exactly pretty much my thoughts on it too. But typically a lot of Southern brawls like that don't last that long.
How long was this? Because this wasn't this long. I thought this was long. Was this more than 10 minutes? I thought it was.
I feel like, hey, maybe it just felt longer because there's so much action that happens in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I just, you know, I've watched a lot of Memphis and I've just watched a lot of brawling. It felt like it was a little bit of a longer match. It may not be. I don't have the time on it in front of me, but it felt like it was that the heat and the intensity of it, that it just lasted a little bit a little bit longer than something
you're
that
right.
Violent.
Yeah. It's actually 14 minutes. So yeah, it did. I think the heat segment is a little bit longer than the heat segments usually are in the brawls. Like they really beat up Dustin real good type thing.
Yeah.
Probably a little extra on that. A little extra.
Mustard. I would say this match, I would say, you know, my buddy from Bucksnort, I couldn't get him down to the podcast tonight, or I wish that
would
I could
be a bigger surprise than Sting.
That would have, yes. Maybe he'll show up on Dynamite next week. I don't know, but I would say that.
Like only like five people would go nuts. I went nuts when he was revealed as Jack Swagger Sr. I was like, that's Jimmy Golden.
But yeah, I would say this match may fly under the radar just a little bit, just because, you know, it's Bunkhouse. And I mean, I would say a lot of people that don't watch as much wrestling as maybe you or I do, or some of our friends, like,
yeah,
may not know much about a Dustin Rhodes versus Bunkhouse Bunk match, but it's incredible.
It's awesome. I love the Brain's line. The Brain is always so kind of sarcastic. Like, you kind of, like, he really took the time to just enjoy this match. Like, he was talking about how he was, like, raised on this type of wrestling. Like, very rarely do you see the Brain break down character and just be like, how much he just loves a match. And he really, you could tell he really liked this one. Because it probably did remind him of Dick the Bruiser and all those guys, the Crusher, you know, just beating the shit out of each other.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so what's your number 24, brother?
All right, my number 24, and I think that you had this one already, but I'll check and make sure. It's the Rock and Roll Express versus the Russians from 7/9/85
for the titles. Yeah, I kind of lowballed that one.
Yeah, and so
I think it's
yeah,
like 60 or something for me.
Okay, well, we kind of flip-flopped then, because that's kind of where I had the Bunkhouse match, and so we've kind of just yeah, so we kind of just swapped them here. But I said that I could say why I would have it ranked above the Terry Funk Ric Flair match, and it's solely upon I couldn't move the Flair and Funk match above Robert Gibson's performance in this match. I just I feel like that this is just Robert Gibson's moment. Well, he has lots of moments, but this he's incredible in this, and I every time I started to like cut and paste Funk Flair over it, I kept thinking about Robert Gibson, and I just kept moving it back. So that's where I am. But this was like the Rock and Roll Express debut and Jim Crockett, and the crowd's nuts for them. And the entire show is basically dedicated to the match. And towards the beginning, the Rock and Rolls are like focusing on the arm of Ivan, but the Russians really muscle them around with like big power moves. And the Rock and Rolls are really good, and they keep a sense of hope alive throughout the arena. You know, through all the big power moves, they're keeping everybody invested in the match, which is part of what makes this one of the best tag matches that is on my list here, and where someone could see. They later get focused on the leg of Ivan, and I think that Ivan did a really good job, you know, selling that really well, and he hobbles over to tag Crusher, and then this is kind of where Gibson shows that he's the man, because he sells the beatdown from the Russians, from the Russian bear on his arm. That it's just incredible. And that's, I guess, the moment that I was referring to where I was like, I just can't. This is number 24. I'm sure about it. And I think you kind of alluded to it earlier, I think with a different match, but with Gibson and Morton, we've got a Jordan Pippen situation here.
Oh, I like it. I like hearing that. I agree with this.
Yeah, yeah. And so then you have can the strength of the Russians outlast the speed of the Rock and Roll Express? I think the commentary team says that, and they start calling them today's team, and they talk about their hearts and their guts and their adrenaline. And no matter what happens, you know, you have to give them credit for fighting all the way to get this, you know, to get to this match to fight for the world titles. And you're thinking, well, you know, even if they don't win here, this is what a debut, right? They do. They win. They get the huge pop. And one other thing I was going to add is I thought Morton was really cool on the side too. He was really animated the whole time that Gibson was putting on that performance. But I mean, what a pop, what a moment, what a debut. It's the Rock and Roll Express, and it's a classic.
It is indeed. Yeah, I guess I just want to I'm going to ask you a question. I don't know if you know the answer or not. So like you said, this is the debut. It's very famous for being the debut because it's like it's generally considered like this is a great way to establish a team and like really book them hot right out of the gate. But my question is, how was the crowd so hot for a team they never saw before?
I don't know the answer for sure, but the way I kind of always thought about it is like basically most of those teams and most of the wrestlers around that time, weren't they all in like the magazines and kind of just popular around?
Okay. So you think, yeah, it was the mag. Yeah. I thought it was probably a magazine thing, but I just didn't know how many wrestling fans were so super into the magazines. I didn't know if they ran vignettes ahead of time. I'd never really heard the story, I guess. So, but it could be the magazines.
When you listen to like I've listened to Arn Anderson's podcast a few times, and he was talking about the Rock and Roll Express and how now, I mean, he may be talking about after they came to JCP, but he just talks about how everywhere they went, it was like torn with the Beatles. Like they,
yeah, it's like pandemonium. Yeah.
Yeah. Like they would drive by a Hardee's and the police would be out there and the crowd would be backed around. And cause I guess they would do like autograph signings at Hardee's. You know, I guess it just seems like that they were basically famous, you know, no matter what they were.
Yeah. So Flair, I've listened to a couple of podcasts with Flair. And so he kind of acted like the chief recruiter, I think, for Crockett, like, you know, because he went on tour a lot. You could see who's really over. And then he would try to entice them to come to Crockett. So he claims that he's the reason why Rock and Rolls came to Crockett is because he saw them what they did in the Mid-South area. And he was like, we need this team. Like this team, he loves working with over baby faces, he would always say. So I agree with you. Yeah. I think Arn and Flair knew that they would be over. It's just kind of interesting that they were over before, as soon as they made their entrance, like that kind of shows that they did have some name value in a territory. I don't think they worked. Like, I think they just went Memphis, Mid-South, Crockett. Right.
Yeah. That's what I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think the only other two things I wanted to add were, I thought David Crockett was, this was David Crockett's like finest hour, you know, head cheerleader.
Yeah,
for the
he was awesome. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing was just to keep praising Robert Gibson. I thought he did a phenomenal job, not just selling, but sort of the gradualism. Like there were more hope spots at the beginning of the heat segment. And then as the heat segment continues, there's less, fewer and further between. But at the same time, he never dies. And yeah, Robert Gibson was definitely the MVP of this match.
For sure, man.
All right.
What's your number 23?
So this is one where you had it low and I have it high. And this is Ric Flair versus Ronnie Garvin, the studio match from World Championship Wrestling, December 28th, 1985.
Oh yeah, man. I'll let you break it down, and my thoughts on this are that it's just like they just beat the crap out of each other for about 15 minutes. That's kind of my memory of it.
That's pretty my pretty much every I think everyone's memory of it. It's just how much mileage you get out of them beating the absolute ever loving shit out of each other. But yeah, to me this match is just like one giant markout moment. Like I'm just marking out the whole time because they're just killing each other. I know Parv really liked this match too.
Yeah, I remember him talking about it. He loved it for sure. And Chad loved it too.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. There's just something about it that's just like, it's just the flesh on flesh, man on man, trading leather. I mean, there's some great like psycho moments from each of them where they're just like choking each other. Like just like they have these crazed looks in their eyes and they just both like go fists, like just grab each other's throats and stuff. Or there's a great moment where Flair just grabs two tufts of Garvin's hair in an absolute rage, only for like Garvin to smack him right in the nose. I mean, I think it also stands out really uniquely because I don't think Flair ever begs off in this match, which is unusual. Maybe towards the end he does, but for like, it's like I said, it's about 15 minutes. I think for like 12 minutes and bangs, which is like pretty unusual. And it's just great because he's great at it. Like he can really kick ass in those type of fights. I feel like it's really manly, and it's just rough and tumble. Like they're grabbing each other's face, throat, and eyes. I don't know. There's just something so like visceral and like primal about it. It's just, you know, it almost feels like a shoot, I guess, and that's kind of I think the appeal of it. And then I like the finish a lot too, where He does hit Hands of Stone. Garvin knocks him out cold. But we get the foot on the ropes. Flair crotches him on the ropes, which I think is a great way. Like, all right, I just got absolutely wrecked by this dude. The ref was kind of out of position, I think, so that's how he got his foot on the ropes. And then he slam, you know, he just goes after the balls, right? What's the weakest point on a man's body? Just let's drop him on his nuts. And then I feel like I grew more hair on my chest watching this match than I did in the first 26 years that I lived on this earth. Like, it was just such a manly, beastly performance from these two men. So.
That's awesome.
So what's your 23?
All right. So my 23 is, I think that maybe you can talk me into bumping this one too, because I can't believe that I have it higher than you. It is, or that you have it higher than me. It's Sting versus Ric Flair, Clash of the Champions 1, 327-88. Is that on your list?
Wow. Not only is it on my list, it is higher. And I mean, I feel like I should have told the Sting story at the beginning of this episode now.
I feel like that by the time that we finish this, you will have convinced me to bump one more Sting match, but we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see where you have it, and then we'll talk about it.
I actually have really good analysis for that match, too. I think after you listen to what I have to say, you'll probably be like, that's number one, actually.
Hey, I might do it. Yeah, we'll get to it. So I guess it's up to your 22 now. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes. Right. I think you said this on an earlier one. It's for the vacant WCW World Championship. It's Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat from their Saturday night, May 1994.
Oh yeah, yeah. This match is a blast.
Yeah, I think what's really cool about this match is that even though it's 1994, like, I feel like Spring Stampede, which was great and made both of our lists, was a little bit more of a greatest hits, kind of like, oh, you know, feels good, nostalgia type thing. Like, there's nothing nostalgic about this match. Like, I feel like it's really innovative. They go, like, what, almost 40 minutes. And even though the Flair is, like, 45, you wouldn't know it. These guys are cardio monsters. And it's just super aggressive, very offensive minded, but yet like aggressive in like a really like technical way. Like they're all both really just going for pins a lot, but like in really interesting ways. Like there's a really organic, cause Flair's a babyface in this match, kind of like in the process of turning heel. So it's a little bit more even than normal. Like there's this really cool moment where he like picks an ankle in like an amateur sequence that, you know how they usually do their amateur sequences at the beginning, and he turns it into a half crab, and it feels like so natural, but like I've never seen Flair do that before. And it was just like a really, like, if I think it's one of those things where if you've watched like a lot of Flair, a lot of Steamboat and a lot of them together, like little things like that all of a sudden pop you that I think if it was two other people might not pop me, but like, you know what I mean? So
right.
It's like a cool little moment. And like I said, there's a lot of just really – and then, of course, they do their staples, like, you know, a lot of chopping, a lot of intensity, a lot of crisscross sequences. There's always a lot of motion with them. Steamboat had some really good selling. I really liked the fact when he almost collapsed on the apron, but he caught the ropes at the last second to keep himself up. So it was just a really – there was a lot of great pin attempts, like I said. And I really think the ending was really good, too, because they kind of they do their big Flair Steamboat sprint that they always do with all the sort of the fireworks that you expect from them. And what ends up finishing it is that Steamboat is flying around doing his thing. And when he either – yeah, it's a leapfrog. Flair headbutts him. It's questionable whether he hits headbutts him in like the nuts or in the like lower abdomen, and that's it. And it's just kind of like they were just so even and so competitive on that night that just like that frog's hair difference, just that lucky break, is what gave it to the Nature Boy. So I thought it was a really cool like spin on their match. And it's pretty crazy because it's like 94 and their first matches were what, in like 78. So
yeah, it blew me away the first time I saw it. It just kind of another one that kind of hit me out of nowhere, because I figured it would be good, but I had no idea that it was going to be a classic the first time that it popped up. And it's one of my favorite TV matches of all time. I had it ranked right beside the Sting and DDP TV match. I had this one at 33 and that one at 32. So just to kind of, I had them beside each other because I kind of look at them, almost kind of look at them in the same light. I guess that's why they're side by side, I guess, is I kind of see them as like just two of the most fun TV matches I've ever seen. And I think they're both classics. And so I kind of just put them there together. I see them pretty equally, really. I just ranked Sting and DDP higher because of just, you know, my a little bit more of an emotional investment to that time frame, but they're both just awesome.
Yeah, I think Sting and DDP has the better crowd, and also like the they do a better job kind of building to the crescendo in Sting DDP. Whereas, and I value those things obviously, but I think what I just kind of valued about this was just like how competitive and like sportsman it was, you know.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. All right. So my number 22, I know for a fact you'll have higher, and I'm looking forward to you breaking it down because it has your two favorite wrestlers of all time and my favorite wrestler of all time. It's Ric Flair versus Randy Savage from the Great American Bash 1995.
Oh, yes. Let me tell you something, brother. I'm not going to talk about it yet because I do have it high, but let me say something. The fact that this match has been overlooked for so many years, I am so glad that it ranked as high as it did on your list because I think it's going to miss a lot of people's list completely. So I'm glad that it made it high.
Well, let's call attention to it tonight for sure. And yeah, so awesome. All right, so what's your 21?
21. I don't think I've heard from you yet, so it's probably higher, or I wonder if it's at the exact same spot. It's World Tag Team Champions, the Four Horsemen, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard versus Lex Luger and Barry Windham from Clash of the Champions 1.
Holy smokes. How did you That's so funny that you would guess that it would be at the same spot because exactly my number 21, Lex Luger and Barry Windham versus Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, 327-88. And
well, we should tell the people in Greensboro on that night that they definitively watched the 21st best match in the history of WCW.
They officially watched the first best show. I would say, I'll just say
I agree with you on this.
Yep. Okay, cool. Yeah, I think that without a doubt, Clash of the Champions 1 is my favorite show of all time. And I don't know if it's a consensus or not, but maybe it's everybody else's too. But I think it's the greatest. It's just from top to bottom. It's my favorite show to watch.
You know what? I'm going to give a shout out, even though it didn't make my list. Everyone sleeps on it and shits on it, but was great. Was Mike Rotundo versus Jimmy Garvin. Jimmy Garvin can go on the mat. People need to open their eyes. That opener is actually really good.
Yeah, and don't forget about the Four Horsemen energy pill. Isn't that on that show?
I don't know if I've seen. To be honest with you, I've seen each of the matches, but I don't think I've seen all the in-between stuff. I'll have to check that out.
There's something, and I don't remember. I don't know if I just heard the audio somewhere or what, but there was definitely some sort of like Four Horsemen energy pill that was they had a commercial for around this time. And I'm pretty sure.
Said that if you could bottle Ric Flair's energy, you would make a shit ton of money off of it.
well, maybe they did. I don't know.
I don't think they did, but if they could have. What's your iconic moment from this match? There's one thing that stands out in my mind above all else from this match.
I've read your review of this match before, and we have the same one.
Okay, so it's the celebratory leap.
Yeah, it's the greatest thing ever.
And Luger's just so pumped. It was just like the best. He's so happy he won. It's great. And Greensboro was so hot that entire night, just not for this, but for everything.
Yeah, I mean, I love Luger's energy when the match starts. I mean, he's on fire, and he gets the torture rack on early. But
I love that.
Yeah, he gets blindsided, but man, yeah, he starts off on fire. I think someone might ask the question, and I said that I could explain it. Like, well, how would this match be above Terry Funk and Ric Flair? Well, to me, I could just say like it feels like poetry in motion. It feels perfect. There's the flow and the feel of this match and how organic everything feels and the emotion of the crowd and the moment. It's just pretty magical.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think all four people kind of work like really well. Like, first off, I don't think we've mentioned this yet, but it's sub 10 minutes, and I think it might be the best sub 10 minute match of all time. Like, it's like 9:30, maybe 9:45, and it's just, and like they don't waste a thing. The other thing is, so I think they all worked interesting, like different roles. Like Tully was super into like shining up the baby faces. He just like shined and sold for them. And then the crazy thing in 1988, like you never saw this, is Tully hit his finish. First off, heels like almost never hit their finish in the 80s. Hits his finish, the slingshot suplex, and there's a kick out. Like, that was wild. The crowd went nuts for that. I thought Arn was a great street cred guy for the heels. So like while Tully was sort of giving the baby faces a lot, when Arn came in, you knew he meant the horseman meant business. You got like the DDT, the spine buster, the clipping on the rack, like you said. I thought Barry Windham was great on the selling for the heat segment. And then Luger was an offensive dynamo. A lot of people don't think of Luger as an offensive dynamo, but Lexi Flexi was pretty damn sexy on this night.
Oh man, yeah. And also I love when Windham and Arn catch each other with like the double punch. And like
Oh,
Arn
yes.
selling and buffing off that is unsurpassed. It's awesome.
Yeah, so it's you know what's crazy is there's really big competition between this and the other tag match on the card. So it sounds like we both had that match higher, so that will be interesting too. Because I think a lot of people have it flipped. I think a lot of people like this better than the Midnight's Fantastics, but both are really good, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. And last thing I'll say is I think my favorite part of that match is when Barry is like Windham, he's like knocked out and I'll use your term waffle legged. I think I'm using it
That was a
correctly.
dusty
But
term.
he like drunkenly walks in a circle and like stumbles into his corner and like he barely, if you watch, he like his hand is like below the waist when he makes the hot tag to Luger. Do you know what I'm talking about? And he
Oh, I know
collapses.
exactly what you, yeah.
Yeah,
I
I
see.
mean
I can see him in
he's.
his head, in my head.
If you go back and watch that match, that's the best moment in the match because he's like stumbling around and then he walks in a circle and the crowd's like, no, not that corner, you know. And then he turns around and literally just like, at like pocket level, raises his hand and Luger gets the hot tag off that barely raised hand. And then of course, it goes nuts after that. But really cool moment.
Yeah, for sure, man. Definitely a hot match. I think it'll place well overall. Pretty famous match.
Yeah, for sure.
So we're going on, since we have that, I'm going to 20, right?
Yes, sir.
I think it's my turn to kind of amaze you with a low ball match. This is going to be the first of the Vader Sting matches to drop, and it's the Super Brawl 3 strap match.
Hey, finally the little stinger in me comes through, and I have that one ranked higher than you.
All right, okay, you're a true Sting fan then. I expect them to be 1, 2, 3, by the way. Anything less, might have to take away your Sting fandom.
Yeah, you're right.
What's number 20, brother, for you?
My number 20, you're definitely going to have higher. We just talked about it. It's the Midnight Express versus the Fantastics from Clash of the Champions 1.
Oh, I kind of like you having them kind of paired that way. Yeah, I have it higher. We'll talk about it in a little bit. I think we're going to do this for maybe for a little bit until we start. There's just no more combinations, and we'll just start hitting them together.
For
I
sure.
don't think I've heard this one from you yet. It's Ric Flair defending his world championship against Lex Luger from WrestleWar 1990.
I do have that one higher.
Okay. All right. So what's your 19?
19, Ric Flair versus Barry Windham worldwide, 120-87.
Yep. So I got that higher. So this is a match that I expect you to have higher than me also. So number 18 for me is Sting versus Vader from Starrcade 1992.
Yes, that one's higher.
Okay, that's your 18.
But this one you have already named, so we can talk about it now. And that is War Games 1991.
Oh, okay. Well, since you had it higher, why don't you break it down and I'll chime in afterwards.
I mean, really, it's an incredible War Games. I would say it's my second favorite. So spoiler, there's one that's going to be coming up. And the things that stand out to me about it is I loved how Pillman utilized the cage in the opening moments. He's throwing the kick at Windham. And I think you might have said that this is your favorite opening to a War Games.
Yep, for sure. That's what I was going to bring up. Pillman versus Wyndham
And
is my
yeah, I
favorite
have
spot of
that.
all time.
Yeah, I have that noted too. Basically, Windham and Pillman really kick this off with a bang. And you have Flair comes out and they chop the shit out of each other. And I know, I believe it was on. Yeah, it had to have been. It was on PWO. I saw that Chad had mentioned he thought this was some of the best Sting and Flair stuff that he had seen in the ring. And I remember the last time I watched that, agreeing with him on that. And I know that some people kind of have a little bit of a bother with the finish, but not me. I think it's a really, really awesome, violent war game.
It's an
great.
Insane finish. I think I saw a tweet headline that, like, Sid recently talked about it and said he did it on purpose or something. I don't know. I need a – shouldn't just spread rumors like this.
Well, that's but... the – we talked about this last time. Isn't that the reason – I don't know if – well, we talked about this last time, but I don't think we talked about this match. But maybe that's part of – could that have been part? Didn't Sid say that to Pillman, and that's what caused Pillman to get mad at Sid?
Oh, with the squeegee? Oh, it's possible.
It's all coming together.
I forgot that they had that little bit of history there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Check me on this, but I think this is right. It's Flair and Wyndham and Sid and Zbyszko defeating Sting, Pillman, the Steiner brothers. And then, of course, it ends with Vicious with repeatedly powerbombing Pillman. Right. And then the one where his head hits the roof of the cage.
Yes, and that was the crazy thing. He was pretty much just out cold. And El Yante, I don't think I said that right. Maybe I did. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Threw the towel in. So.
And Zbyszko was a replacement for Arn Anderson.
Yeah, he was injured or sick or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. To me, the reason why this is like 35 instead of a little bit higher is I think the first like 3/5 of it is like super good. And then it kind of like winds down before the crazy finish. So like I said, I love the Pillman Wyndham stuff. There's like a really feral moment where like Pillman looks like a rabid raccoon or something. Like he like has Barry Windham's blood all over his mouth. And it's just like, this is what the fuck's wrong with you, bro? That's insane. And then I really liked... like you said, Flair versus Pillman's always gold, right? And Flair's the second man. So I really liked when Flair and Wyndham finally were able to take an advantage on Pillman. And so Pillman already had the shoulder taped up, and he throws the shoulder into the cage. And I think that was just great. So, you know, the heels take over. I love the Flair hip thrust. And then the other thing you brought up was Sting was really, really good. I thought this was like – I mean this in the best way possible. I've said this before about Sting. Sting, especially in this time period, was like a kid hopped up on way too much sugar, and it was just great. So, yeah, I just awesome. Really thought the front end of the War Games was really, really strong. But, yeah, I just didn't think the Steiners added much, I guess. I thought Larry Zbyszko was really good too, actually. But
Yeah, Zbyszko's great. All right, so what's your 17?
This is something that you mentioned – you disappointed all the little Stingers of the world, and I can now talk to you about it. It's Ric Flair versus Sting from Clash of the Champions 1.
I could see you talking me into bumping it this high, so we'll see what you got.
All right, so this is what I got for you, brother. So I think this is a great advertisement for keeping an open mind in wrestling. So I had seen this a couple times. I think I was pretty underwhelmed by it. It's 45 minutes, so it's pretty long, and I think the general consensus, especially among like the people at PWO, is this really wasn't that good. So I was like, all right, I'm not going to really – I'm going to watch it because I got to watch it type thing, but I kind of like already kind of wrote it off. But I thought this was fantastic. Like, to me, this might be Flair's best spot calling in the history of all his spot calling. I know, as you know, Flair's very – he's the opposite of a Randy Savage or a DDP. Everything's pretty spontaneous. And so that can give like a really cool organic and chaotic feel to his matches. But at the same time, it can also just lead to a lot of nonsense and some stuff that leaves you scratching your head. But I thought here he was just like on point with his spot calling. And this is, in my opinion, his best spot calling match of all time. And I think the key to this match, what I really loved about this, is that throughout the 45 minutes, Sting couldn't buy a high spot to save his life. And it was all chalked up to rookie mistakes, because at the time, Sting had just joined Crockett in like late 87, and it's only like March 88. And so they treated every high spot, even like high spots that we don't really consider high spots anymore, like just like a flying clothesline, as high-risk moves. And so they tell this great story about how in the first 15 minutes, everything is super basic, but like Sting is just He's just working these holds. It's very conservative. It's the best bear hug I think I've ever seen in my life. Like, Flair makes this bear hug the most entertaining bear hug you could watch. And you're just like, okay, Sting's got – it's very like Butch Reed, if you've ever seen the Butch Reed matches. But he knows at the same time that he can't win this way. He can just control the match this way. And so what's interesting is in the middle 15 minutes, and this is really where like the match, my eyes started to open, is Sting starts to get impatient and he just keeps making these mistakes going for the home run. And Flair just gets this great offense in the middle 15 minutes. And then the last 15 minutes, they just go balls to the wall. Sting, I think Sting's first high spot that he actually lands is like a Stinger splash with like 30 seconds to go. And you're just like, holy crap, like he can actually pull this off. He finally landed it. And so I really like the Ric Flair heat segment. Anytime there's a fish hook, I always have to mention it. He fish hooked Sting, which I loved. Sting was super charismatic and electric in this match. I will say, even though Sting didn't hit that many high spots, what he made up for was selling that was engaging, but also timing his no selling really well. There's this big difference between no selling and not selling. No selling is I am registering pain, but I'm overcoming it because I'm a man. And when you no sell at the right time, I don't think there's any way to pop a crowd better. Like, it fills me up with like testosterone. It like supercharges me and I'm ready to like rock and roll. And like I said, I felt like Flair just called the match of his freaking life for Sting. He just made Sting look great, and he told an interesting story that you don't see very often, where he really treated a rookie like a rookie, but like Sting just had so much energy, and that's what kept him in it for the whole 45 minutes. So, this is a crazy thing. I wrote my review, and after reading it, I still believe it. I think they needed more time than 45 minutes. I think they had a story that needed a little bit more fleshing out. I think they could have won 60 and had the greatest 60-minute match of all time.
Man, I have this at 23. You have it at what, 17?
17. Not too much.
We're close here, and I think you may have talked me into bumping it a little bit, just because also just the meaning behind it, right? This is the match that launched the Icon.
It is.
Sting is imperative to WCW, right? He's the man. You were talking about one thing though, is I do think he was sold at like the right moments too, though. Like he had, yeah. Like there's a spot where he's like selling the shot to the ribs, and he's selling his fatigue. You know what I'm talking about?
I know it. Yeah, because Flair was like at the ribs for the most part.
And you just think about, if you put like Goldberg, for example, in that situation that early on in his career, I don't know if he would have performed at that level in that spot. Maybe that's unfair. I don't know.
No, I think it's not unfair. I mean, I've seen plenty of Flair versus Nikita matches, and Flair versus Nikita is not that great.
Yeah. And also,
I think that's a fair comp too. It's like Sting clearly outclassed Nikita in a relatively similar style match.
Yeah. And also, like, I talked about this before, but like obviously the Clash, it drew really well. It was a 5.8 TV rating. And I don't know throughout the years how that, as far as audience changes, but it was from what I understood, but when I looked it up, it was the highest. It was higher than any of the Clash of the Champions. Even higher ratings than the Clash of the Champions that happened like during the Monday Night Wars. As far as like the actual rating, I don't know how that goes to viewership, but the main event drew a 7.1, which was higher than any of the main events in Clash of the Champions history too. So regardless of that, it's just the, you know, it's the match that made Sting. It's pretty much what it boils down to. And I loved Jim Ross and Tony on the call of the Clash. And Tony's one of my favorites of all time, maybe my favorite. And it's a classic for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you have it ranked that high, because I think that there's been a time frame that the match became a little bit underrated. I don't know.
Oh, there's a backlash towards this match for
sure.
Yeah,
it's weird.
Yeah. No,
because if you watch it, I don't have the same I've seen people write out their thoughts on it, and as far as to why they didn't like it for certain reasons. But I guess I kind of see it more in the way you see it, and as far as I'm concerned, yeah.
I think the complaints are like it's like Flair versus a broomstick. Flair's just calling all the same spots he normally calls, and I'm just like, I don't see that at all. Like, first off, I think he calls. I've already said this is like his best spot calling match of all time. Like, he starts super conservative. He takes the middle 15. When does Flair take a middle 15? And the last 15 is the big gangbusters finish. But I think there's two things. One, he calls a lot better match than people are giving him credit for. And second, Sting is a lot better than your run of the mill muscle head that he was going up against at this time period. So I think you pointed out the Sting thing. And I agree with you. I think Flair could have called this match with Nikita Koloff, and I probably would be like, oh, this was very good. It was like 3.5 stars, you know? Like, Sting makes a difference, so.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Awesome. I'm glad you have it so high, and I'm glad that I have an excuse to bump it a few spots.
No problem. I'm here for you.
Awesome. All right, so does that mean I'm on to 17?
That does, brother.
All right, you probably have this higher, but this is my first crack at the trilogy here. We got Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat, 5789.
So you're going with the Wrestle War first. All right, we'll keep track of that. I do have it higher, so we will talk about it later.
So far we've had all of them ranked in the same order. Spoiler, so we'll see how that shakes out.
Spoiler, we do not anymore. So we'll be interested to see how the trilogy shakes out. I think I have a weird ranking. So
all right, so what's your 16?
Number 16, I think you mentioned already, it's my favorite feel good match of all time. It's the Midnight Express, it's the Rock and Roll Express, it's Wrestle War 1990.
Yeah, man, go for it.
Yeah, so to me, this is like my favorite Southern-style tag match of all time. Like I said, you can be feeling blue as blue can be. You know, your girlfriend could kick you to the curb. You could lose your job all on the same day, and I still think you'd be smiling after watching this match. There's just so much fun in this match. The comedy spots in the beginning are awesome. Like people love talking about the Nick Patrick one, but the one that I noticed – I read a lot of reviews on PWO, and I'm still the only person who's brought it up, but I still think it's insane that Morton climbs up Eaton and then jumps off his shoulders and fist drops Lane. Like, that was insane. Like, that was a cool high spot.
Was that when he, like, walks up the front of him?
Yeah, he walks up the front of him. He had done a similar spot in, like, 87, but they didn't hit a move. Looked cool. Like, this time they did the cool thing with the move, so it was really sweet.
Yeah, that's a super cool spot for sure.
And so my big thing is I'm not gonna list the moves here. Like, you just gotta go out and see it. Just trust me when I say it's just super fun at the beginning, and what's really cool is how they seamlessly transition from comedy to drama, because when they go to the heat segment, they go to the heat segment. Like, sometimes the Midnights don't, because they're heels, they kind of, like, you know, leave something in the tank, you know what I mean, because at the end of the day they shouldn't look as good as the baby faces. Like, I felt like they let loose. They just kind of unleashed their arsenal and just put on a clinic. It was great. They built to the hot tag, which is what you want in a Southern style tag. It was a really hot finish. And the best part is, in my opinion, is that in a feel good match, the good guys should go over. So the good guys go over. It's great. For me, the comp, the comparison that I go to that I also love, and I know I'm really high on compared to a lot of people, is the famous Rockers versus Rougeaus match from London of 89. I know that's pretty polarizing, but to me, it's very similar. Super fun babyface shine, really dramatic heat segment, hot finish.
Yeah, I like that match too that you're talking about. I like it's the Philly title change, and I had the Superstars on the Superstation and the Philly title change a little bit higher than this one, but I love this one too. I mean, the chemistry with these teams is just incredible. And also like the spot where Cornette nearly gets into the fist fight with the referee.
With Nick Patrick, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's definitely the iconic spot. So do you feel, I mean, this is just a question, just curious. So it sounded like you had two Condry matches over this. Do you just kind of like the grittier style of Condry?
You know, I didn't even think about it, because I don't, not necessarily, because I said personally, I like the Midnight Express versus the Fantastics. Just
Okay.
personal preference. Like that's my
Yep.
favorite. That may be my favorite combination of tag teams. There's two. My two favorite combinations are Midnights and Fantastics, and then and the Rock and Rolls and Andersons. So those are. I would say I probably am a Stan Lane guy.
Well, have you seen the Mid-South and Texas stuff where Condrey faces the Fantastics?
I have, but it's
It's not
been
as good. Or
well,
it's been a while.
it's been a while too for
Okay.
me. I would say probably like 4 or 5 years since I've watched those.
I see. Okay.
I need to go. I
Yeah.
need to go back to them.
My general recollection is that the Lane stuff is better with the. Well, as Stan Lane's unofficial number one fan, I do like Stan Lane a little bit more than Dennis Condrey, but I do remember the '88 Fantastic Series with Lane being a little bit better than the World Class and the Mid-South Series. But in
Yes.
general, I do like Midnights versus Fantastics a little bit more than Midnights versus Rock and Rolls.
Yeah, so maybe just with the pairing of the Rock and Roll Express, maybe I
Yeah.
like him a little more. But in general, I guess usually I'm a Stan Lane guy.
Okay, so that was my 16. What's your 16, brother?
My 16, I think some people will have this in their top five. So, but it's Rick, and I thought it was going to be in my top. I had it penciled in at number six when I started the list, but anyway,
Wow.
it's
Fell
Rick
all the way.
Rude. Yeah,
Okay.
well, not too far. I mean, once you get this high, you're pretty high. But it's
Pretty
Rick
high.
Rude versus Ricky Steamboat from 6/20/92.
The Iron Man match?
Yep.
Yeah, higher, brother.
Okay.
All right. Let's talk about the match that I think I am most excited to talk about. I've been a liar a little bit on this show. I've called matches favorite matches.
You've already said two different ones are your favorite.
Well,
You had
this is my
DDP at
third.
Spring Stampede, and then you said, no, wait, it's Tully Blanchard and Dusty. It's the Tape Fist match. So what do you got now?
I got Randy Savage versus Ric Flair at the Great American Bash 1995.
Now that's more like it.
Now, the word I'm going to use to describe this is feral. This is two wild animals just going at it. So to me, this match is pretty criminally underrated. I have noticed an uptick in the amount of people who are talking about it. But to me, I've never really felt an American match that feels like this much of a shoot. Like Randy Savage. So the story context is it's Father's Day, and the previous month, Ric Flair attacked Angelo Poffo. So Angelo Poffo's out with Savage, and Savage is out for blood. Like, but it's like insane. Like, there's a spot that I always remember is in a lot of things in wrestling for safety purposes. You know, the wrestler is usually looking at the other wrestler when they hit them, right? And the good wrestlers kind of make it feel organic and try not to let the other dude be standing there for a while. But what was crazy about this match was both of them did this to each other, is they would just jump on each other from behind and really deck each other. Like, and it looked scary. It was like, what the fuck? And it was uncooperative, it was violent. And like I said, it was just absolutely wild. And then so first off, the brawling at the beginning, which is mostly just Savage just kicking ass, is insane. But then it kind of settles into like, okay, this is the second act is like even next level. So Flair suckers him in by trying to attack Angelo, and he clips the knee, and then he drops his shin, like knee, on the railing first, and it's like wicked nasty. And Brain says at this point, I love this. He goes, "I wonder if Daddy brought two canes." And I'm just like, "That's
Ha
great." And it's Randy Savage selling the knee. I think there's two people in this world. It's Randy Savage selling the knee and Toshiaki Kawada, right? Those are your two go-tos. It doesn't get any better than this. And the way Savage is so scrappy, he's throwing punches, and you can feel the desperation, the helplessness, because Savage wanted to do this so much for his father, and what, like, he can't go, he can't stand. And your heart goes out to him because you just want him to do so well for his dad. And then there's another great moment where Flair has him in like the figure four. And his dad is trying to like get the ref's attention that Flair's like using the ropes. And it's just so emotional. Like this father is so concerned for his, you know, real son. It's just, it's really insane. And of course you get the big finish with Savage like hopping around on one leg, which is what he's just so good at. And he's just diving at Flair and punch. He's Savage. He's just a nut, right? And, you know, he does hit the big elbow, but he pulls him up at two. It's not good enough. He goes for the ring bell, right? You know, like iconic Savage weapon. And, you know, what ends up happening is it gets knocked out of his hand. He dies on the railing. You know, that classic Savage chin first bump. And Flair just snaps. Like, there's nothing better than psychotic Flair. We'll talk a lot about psychotic Flair in the coming matches. And he just, like, I think he was just so pissed, like, as a character that, like, Savage was going to try to maim him with the ring bell. He grabs the cane, right? And just fucking smokes him, like, obliterates him with this cane, like, holds nothing back. And even though, it, like, you know, it was a big weapon finish, like, I loved it. I thought it was a great heel finish. And I'll end with this. I should have mentioned this like multiple times. There is a separate forum that I am a member of that everyone should join. It's gweproject.freeforums.net. Every year we do the greatest match of all time for all promotions. We've done 2019 and 2020 in terms, like, we just vote again and again and see how people's lists are changing. So anyways, I posted this. Elliot's a very, he's a moderator. He's like a big time poster there. So I nominated this and I basically said it's Flair versus Savage on a WCW pay-per-view, but somehow it flies under the radar. Don't let this fly under the radar. And his response was in all caps, and how in the fuck does no one talk about this match? Like, it's the best. So if you haven't seen it, you gotta watch it.
Yeah, and I just want to second that. I'll second you, and then I'm gonna second Elliot too. And of course, and some of my notes from it too were just that it felt like a shoot, and that they really go at it. You got the goat knee selling Savage. And I thought that Savage having his dad at ringside really added to the drama too. Like, it's just so awesome. Yep. And so I had Sting versus Ric Flair at 23, and then I had this one at 22. And you have this one ranked higher than Sting and Flair, so I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling pretty good about the placement. I don't think I can swap them. So, but yeah, 22, and this was what for you?
15. Yeah.
15. So we're not that far apart, man. And like you said, this is an all-timer, and I think that I don't maybe if here, my only theory is that WCW got super hot after what, like Bash at the Beach, basically 96, right?
This is 96.
So there were more eyes on the product, I think, after Hogan and Savage came over, for sure. But most of the people, or most of us, I think, that really got into wrestling during like that 96, 97, 98 era, probably not a lot of people went back and watched like those in between years as much as some, right? Like, not as many people probably have went back and watched like the 90, 94, 93, 94, 95 era, where they maybe fell out for a little while. And then when they became a teenager and wrestling was hot again, they jumped back in. So that's the only theory that I have.
I agree with you. It's also pre-Nitro. Nitro doesn't start until September.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like 95 WCW is kind of a nadir for them. Like, not a lot of people talk about, I mean, WWF 95 is also a nadir for WWF. Like, 95, I would say, probably the weakest year in U.S. wrestling in the 90s. So I think there's probably just a lot of that going on. But yeah, it's a absolute banger, as the kids would say, of a match. So
yeah, awesome. I'm glad we both have it.
I'm really glad you had it too. Like, that's like huge to me. It's just I'm glad that, you know, it's starting to make waves. So good to hear.
All right, so is it my 15?
15, brother.
All right, I guess you have this one higher. And again, I'm sorry, Sting. I feel like I'm letting him down, but even though he's all over this top 25, so I don't know why I feel bad. But it's Sting versus Vader from the Great American Bash, 1992.
I see. So our trilogy is also, our order in this trilogy is different. So yes, I have this one higher.
Yeah. Okay.
So you must have this higher because this is Elliott's favorite match of all time. It is NWA US Champion Greg the Hammer Valentine versus Roddy Piper from Starrcade 83 dog collar match.
That's your 14?
14.
Okay, I do have it higher. But that's interesting that that's your 14 because
Okay.
my 14, which we can talk about now, and I'd like to know where you had it ranked once I say it. It's Roddy Piper versus Greg Valentine from 7983.
Oh, yes. Honestly, I reread my review of this and then was like, oh, I need to watch this again because my review is pretty gushy. And then I'm like, I don't remember it being this good in my head. Yeah, 53. So why don't you go
Yeah,
first?
so
I'll chime in.
sure. Yeah, so this is if you haven't seen this match, it's out there on the Hidden Gems on the WWE Network. But I like brawls, and this is the ultimate brawl. I mean, it is an all-timer. I mean, we talked about Magnum TA, and we mentioned the likes of like Lawler and Dundee, and this is elite level striking too. You have basically the power of Valentine versus the speed of Piper. And right out of the gate, these guys are throwing bombs. There's no commentary, so you can hear the strikes, and Piper throws a ton of quick punches at Valentine, who first he has to retreat. And then he comes back with these nasty forearms, and they just look painful. But Piper fires back with his speed again, and he eventually gets Valentine right in the throat. I mean, it looks, he gets him right in the throat, and then he has to retreat again. And then, so Piper's like throwing combinations in this thing, and he's basically doing whatever it takes as far and taking it as far as he can take it to win the match, like ear punching and biting, and stuff like that. And then at one point, he's gonna remove the eye of the hammer, and of course the hammer is trying to rely on his strength throughout the match, and of course Piper has a bad ear. And Valentine beats that up, and it gets violent, and they go back and forth, and it's a fight from there, and the finish is brutal. So Piper dives off the apron onto Valentine while he's outside, and they fall into the rope that they're using as like a fan barrier, like they have rope, where they've roped off the fans, and which leads to Piper organically. I mean, he or like it's so natural how he just kind of like stumbles into it, and then he realizes, hey, I can use this as a weapon, and he wraps it around Valentine's throat. But that's not enough. No, he starts moving the rope back and forth against the skin of Valentine's neck and just rope burning his neck, and dude. Valentine, this is what puts I almost felt like I didn't even put it high enough because there's a moment in this match that I think there's only one other match on my list that almost makes me like feel this way or whatever when I'm watching a match. But for a split second, Valentine starts like shaking like he's going into shock. I mean, his
There's like
body is
spit
like
coming out,
convulsing.
right? It's like
Yeah,
frothing.
he hangs him. He hang like literally hangs him, and then he starts like foaming at the mouth, like he's about to die. Piper's gonna kill this guy. I mean, this is like it's nuts. And if you haven't seen this, go watch it because it's crazy. And then guys run out of the back because they're like, "Well, we better Piper. We don't want Piper to get a life sentence here. We get out there before this guy goes to jail." And at this point, when I was watching it on the Hidden Gems, and I've watched it quite a few times since then, the first time I watched it, but I'm just thinking to myself, "This is one of the best matches I've ever seen." And oh yeah, after it's over, Piper goes back into the ring and he starts yelling for Valentine to come back. Like Valentine would want to come back. You know, he's like, he's just screaming, like, come on back, come on back. I'm like, dude, you just murdered this man. And then, I mean, I'll just say this, like right now it's a 14. I could see it years from now being higher for me because I feel like it's gonna age like fine wine. But that's my kind of my thoughts on that match, and that's why it's so high for me.
I think it's interesting that you have it. It's and the way you describe it is exactly how my review is. But for some reason, like I just don't have a strong memory of it, and which is weird because like it's all very emotional, and it sounds so much similar to the Flair versus Savage match that I just talked about, where a lot of it feels like a shoot, just because Piper has this like wild-eyed look in his eye, and there's a moment where I talk about like he just tackles Valentine. Like There's just like this, just like insane, like out of nowhere tackle. The other thing is, and you kind of brought it up, is the ear psychology that makes the Starrcade match famous is already in play. So I don't know the history behind it completely, but it looks like Valentine had already injured the ear, and now this match, Piper's kind of out for an ear for an ear.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Valentine, when he talks about their feud, he calls it the year of the ear.
Yeah, I like that. So Greg Valentine is probably one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I would say he's definitely in my top 20, if not top 10, just in terms of my favorites. I think he's just fantastic. I love his style. He does so well in the WWF. I just wish we had more of his stuff like pre-83, even more stuff from 83. So, I mean, you did a great job breaking down the Piper stuff, but I'll just add in like the Hammer. He's just a stiff motherfucker, and he's just
he lays it in.
When he bashed
but that
post.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But that, I don't know how he. I just don't even know how he did that. That shaking, convulsing. I just don't know how he even did that. It's just incredible.
Oh, he's, you know what? I'm kind of like glancing at my review right now. You know what's really cool about the Piper performance in this? Did you notice that Valentine smashing his ear up against the post, you know, grinding the ear, just beating the shit out of Piper? Piper never bumped, which I think is huge. He's a babyface who can take a licking but keep on ticking. I think that was
surprising.
I think that's a big deal. Like, people don't realize, like, I'm all for bumping, but there's right and wrong times to do it. And, like, in a brawl like this where you're fighting for your life and you're really pissed, like, you wouldn't bump. And I think it's great that Piper didn't do it.
After talking about it, I think I have two possible moves. I think I could find myself moving Sting and DDP up just a smidge or two. And then I think, I don't know, I may have talked myself into moving this one just a little bit higher too. We'll have to see as we go through, but it's just, I really do feel like it's an all-timer.
I think what I got to do is this is one of the matches, like, it's a must. I have to watch it again.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay, you definitely sold me on that. And I think it's big that I'm glad that you had it high on your list, because I think, like you said, it's hidden gem. It definitely got a lot of play when it came out, but I think at the same time, it being a hidden gem, only being out for a couple of years, it's good to give it a lot of promotion.
Yeah, I knew I was going to rank it high because I remembered how much I liked it. But and then I went back and watched it, at some point this year, and then I watched it again not too long ago just because I wanted to, and it just, every time I watch it, I like it more.
Yeah, I definitely need to rewatch it. All right, so my number 13, so I'll only do this once, so for all the star rating nerds out there, and I'm a nerd too, but this is where the 5-star matches begin for me. So,
oh, right on. I would I don't do the whole star ratings thing, so let me think. I would say, like, I don't know how to. Yeah, I'm just gonna say that these are all classics.
They are all classics. So this is where.
Go for it.
You've already said it, so we will talk about it. It's NWA World Champion Ric Flair versus Barry Windham from Worldwide, January of '87.
Oh yeah, yeah. This match is really awesome. I'll let you talk about it, but I feel like that by the end of this match, well, I'll say this, Wyndham selling this match is basically, the chef's kiss, like, and these guys are like drenched in sweat.
Yes.
It felt like just this incredible athletic competition. So I'll let you go for it though.
Yeah, I think before I get into this match, I just kind of interested in your sort of comparisons. So for me, before I rewatched this match, and again, I rewatched it for that greatest match of all time poll that I just plugged, I used to think the Florida match was better. So the Florida match I'm talking about is Battle of the Belts 2 from early 86, which doesn't count because Florida was a separate territory at the time. And Chad was the same way as me, but he said when he rewatched this that he also flip-flopped.
I like this one better too.
Yeah, I flip-flopped. Yeah, I used to think for sure Florida. I thought this match was a lot tighter. And I thought it had the Florida match has a really great Wyndham selling, really good Wyndham selling. But I think the offense is a little bit tighter and the escalation is a little bit better in this match. Other question I have for you.
And the ballot also wasn't eligible for this list, right?
It's not. It's a separate.
Yeah, okay.
Florida was purchased, I believe, in 87. Because, it was purchased in 87 because Mike Rotundo was the headliner in Florida in 87. And so he comes in with the Florida title.
I definitely like this one better for sure.
Next question I have for you is, so there is still 13 matches left, so it's possible you have it, but I am interested in how you feel about the Crockett Cup 87 match.
I think that I don't remember. I guess I probably just didn't watch it very recently. It's probably been a really long time, so I don't think I have it.
Yeah, my thing is, a lot of people like the Crockett Cup 87 match. I find it to be very by the numbers Flair, and as you can tell, I'm a pretty big Flair guy. I give him a lot of love. But that being said, there is by the numbers Flair. It's like ice cream. It still tastes really good, but it's not something that makes my top 100. So that's just my.
I'll say this. I think that I probably watched it a long time ago, and I like Barry Windham more now than I did, like, say, I don't even know, 10 years ago or whatever. But Barry Windham, I like more and more the older I get and the more wrestling that I watch. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that is probably a reason why I didn't, you know, maybe it's just something I haven't seen in a long time. It's probably the only reason it's not on my list.
Yeah, I mean, it might be worthwhile for you if you want to. It's a pretty famous match, so it might be worth going.
Yeah, I should definitely go back and rewatch it for sure.
Anyways, just breaking down this match. Like I said, I think really what makes this and the Florida match stand out so well, like you already said, is really Wyndham's is selling. But I think just the offense escalation is a little bit better than Florida. We start with mostly it's Wyndham working a side headlock, Flair's working the arm. Wyndham's doing a lot of great out wrestling. Oh, the other thing that Wyndham does really well, it's similar to Steamboat. I think Wyndham and Steamboat are pretty good comparisons for a Flair opponent because they can do the wrestling aspect on the mat. They can do with Steamboat it's chops, with Wyndham it's punches. And they can also do the cardio stuff with Flair, where they do like a lot of crisscross, a lot of like 80s work rate, which I enjoy quite a bit. I think I really like the use of the outside. It's something that we'll see a lot that I'll bring up in Flair matches, is that basically once he exhausts all his strategies of trying to win, he'll try to either lure or throw somebody outside the ring, and then he can use like a steel post or a steel railing to take command of the match. And I love a good strong meaty Flair heat segment. Sometimes they don't last as long as they can, but Flair actually works the arm really well. Like I always like when he punches like a person's armpit, and I didn't even have this as a note, but I was just thinking about it right now live. Is that I forget who announcer was, but like I'm not an anatomy and physiology major, so maybe I'm wrong, but according to the announcer, there's like no muscle in the armpit. And so that's why it makes sense to punch the armpit. Do you know, is this true?
Well, I'll say that when I go work out, I don't do a lot of armpit exercises.
So the idea is there's not a lot of meat on the bone in the armpit. So when you punch it, there's nothing to absorb it. You're just basically hitting a bone, I guess. And so that's the idea behind Flair punching people in the armpit. And in case anyone was wondering, he's not trying to tickle.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get punched in the armpit. So it's a good point.
Yeah. So, at some point we have to talk about this. Is Barry Windham not the greatest at taking the bump over the top rope?
Yeah, I'll go for that.
It's like he melts into the apron. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The way
he's
he kind of
awesome.
Just does it, and he just like his entire body like goes limp. It's amazing. And then I think really what it comes down to is just the big finish run that's like Flair. I think what Flair does really well, and we'll talk about it more, is he's always throwing something at his opponent. I think people miss this because Flair's always getting overwhelmed, but like you have to give Flair credit. He's not ragdolling. Like he'll throw a knee, he'll throw a chop, he'll throw a punch, and you have to fight through his offense. And I think that's what's really cool, like towards the stretch, is like it's like they're like a big, it's like a Tasmanian devil like thing back, you know, in the cartoon where like everyone gets caught in the cloud of dust. Like that's what ends up happening. And then, so like, it's a TV time limit, or is it 45 minute time limit? I don't know. Dusty's on commentary. He's going nuts. There's 5 minutes left. Wyndham's just going nutso with all of these huge near falls. He can't muster up his patented float over on the suplex, and the bell expires. I thought it was just one of those great race against the clock. A lot of drama. And yeah, to me, Wyndham felt like the new Steamboat. So, I really enjoy this one.
Yeah, man. I had it at 20. Let's see. Well, I guess I had it even higher than that. I had it at 19. So we're pretty close. Yeah.
We're pretty close. I think it's generally that's one that's going to do pretty well, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's a pretty famous match. It was on that original Flair DVD set also. So.
So my number 13. I know you're going to have higher. So it's Ric Flair versus Ricky Morton, 7/5/86.
I was waiting for this to drop. I was like, it's got to go top 10. It's got to go top 10. Oh, you disappoint me greatly.
It's right outside the top 10. It's right outside the top.
It's right outside.
It's, all right. If I did stars, this would be 5.25.
You know,
so
what?
Everything that I have going forward on my list is 5.25.
That made my heart smile.
All right, so what? So that would be your 12 now, right?
My 12. Yes, you said it already because you said it right after the. I remember you saying it now. It's U.S. Tag Team Champions Midnight Express versus the Fantastics from Clash 1.
Nice.
All right, so the only reason this is 12 instead of in the top 10 is I hate dusty finishes, but everything else besides this is just absolutely perfect.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you.
Yeah, it's raucous mayhem. The brawl is insane. Oh, key thing is, so I watched this match, I think most of my, until I was like 23, I think I found PWO when I was about 23. So up until I was 23, I was just watching matches willy-nilly. Like, I didn't really, like, figure out how to, like, understand builds and stuff. I understood that there were builds, but I didn't know, like, what matches to watch to see the builds, and then I discovered PWO, and it was just laid out in really easy to find fashion. But that pro match, didn't we like not talk about any of the Fantastics matches because we got our wires crossed? Do we have to talk about them all?
No, right, we talked about all of them, and the only one that we haven't talked about is one where you have the date that it was taped, and I'm using the television date. And I guess spoiler, we're not there yet.
Oh, okay. I see. Thanks for rhyming, because otherwise I was just about to launch it. I'm like, let's just do the trilogy all.
Yeah, we've talked about all of them so far, but yeah, there's still one to come. And in the last episode, you asked me if I had this one, and you were just using a tape to date, and so I just was thrown off. But I figured it out afterwards. But go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So the Clash 1 match. The brawl is justified because the previous night on Pro, the Fantastics had upset the Midnight Express, and not only had upset them, but they were the debuting Fantastics. So they, similar to the Rock and Roll Express, they devoted the whole episode of Pro. The thing was, very interestingly, the Midnights could dominate that match. They missed their finish, the rocket launcher, and the Fantastics hit that finish, the rocket launcher, on them to win. So it was like one of those things where it wasn't just any loss. Like, they were pissed about this loss. And so it really leads to this like raucous start. Like, the beginning is so awesome. And the transition to the heat segment, like, I'm all for the sliding knee on the apron or like the blind tag or all the general tropes to start a heat segment in a tag team match. But there is nothing that will ever top the blind tag into total elimination. And all I have to say is the Midnight Express is the gods, and we are just mere mortals, because they were just on fire. Like, Eaton was so smooth. Lane, his karate kicks were just landing with that little extra mustard. There's a table. Like, they use the table. Like, this like also felt like Memphis, too. Like, there was tables and chairs. It was just insanity. And oh, I don't know if I've talked about this yet, but Bobby Fulton's punches are just absolutely killer. Greensboro is molten. Tommy Rogers takes the beating of a lifetime. Oh, and then the finish. I love the finish. Well, I don't like the actual finish, but the lead up to the finish is great. Because basically Rogers makes the hot tag. Fulton is being impeded by the ref. How many times have we seen this throughout wrestling history? But Fulton basically says, fuck you, and throws the ref out. And the crowd goes nuts. I love Bobby Fulton. The dude's just all fucking like, he's just all moxie. The dude's just all character. And then it's just absolutely, it's just like gangbusters ending. Cornette gets involved, and we get the same finish as we do the previous night. We get the Fantastics hitting the rocket launcher. 1, 2, 3. They should have won the tag titles. Dusty finish. The Dusty finish is what knocks it down a peg. But other than that, this is my favorite, definitely my favorite WCW tag team match of all time. Might be my favorite U.S. Oh, I do really like that Rockers Buddy Rose Doug Summers match, but it's up there. It's awesome. Oh, it's short too. It's only like, what is it, 10-15 minutes? It's a short one.
I mean, even after that, the crowd's going crazy, and then they keep brawling, and then they start beating Fulton with the belt. The match is insane. Just tons and tons of energy. The pacing is unreal. Like you said, they're using everything from chairs to tables, and Cornette is just Cornette at his best. And like you said, Eaton's offense is just pounding. Clash of the Champions. Yeah, it's pretty much the greatest show in U.S. history.
Yeah, three matches made my top 20. So
that's
insane.
Yeah, top three in my top 23.
Yeah, so just a great night of wrestling. Those fans were very lucky that night.
So this is perfect, because my number 12 is Midnight Express versus the Fantastics from Worldwide 5/14/88, which is the one you had for the date of 4/26/88, because that's when it was taped.
I see. Yeah, we should use the televised date.
Yeah, there's a part of me that thinks this might be the best WCW tag match of all time, but I do have one higher, so I guess we'll get to that when I get there. But
I'm trying to even think of what that is. I've kind of lost track of what you've had, so I'm ready to be surprised on that one.
So you got the tag team champions, right? The U.S. tag champions, Midnight Express versus the Fantastics. And I guess this is from I think this one was from Chattanooga. And then
Shout out to Ben Zaney if you're going to be listening to this, brother. He's from the Nuga. He's originally from Boston. So anyways, cool. All right, yeah, go into it.
Yeah, man. Fulton gets the best of Stan like right out of the gate. And I love like Stan's reactions and facial expressions like right off the start. And like Bobby Eaton's like in the corner rubbing his shoulders. Yeah. And then the match also has like the best spot ever when Eaton he tries to throw Tommy Rogers over his head. And Tommy Rogers does like a ninja flip and lands on his feet. And then he hits like a picture perfect drop kick on Eaton. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking
about.
The first
time I saw it, I like came out of my chair. I was like, what? It's just nuts. And then of course the Fantastics like clear the ring and strut, and Cornette's throwing a temper tantrum, and it's just the, you know, the crowd's in love with the Fantastics, and it's awesome. And Fulton's he's like eating it up too, and he's laying on the rings and like flirting with the ladies at ringside. He's like laying the ropes. Yeah. He's like flirting with the ladies at ringside and posing for the crowd, and they're like showing like pictures of like the different women in the crowd and stuff. And Tony puts over in commentary how important it is. I like this part too. He's talking about like how important it is to be the champion and how much more money a wrestler makes on a card if he's the champion. And there's a really cool spot where Tommy goes for like a head scissors or something like that on Eaton. But he's like too close to the corner, and Stan Lane grabs his head and just slams his neck onto the ropes, and it's ruthless.
Yeah. It's an awesome transition to the Eat segment.
Yes. And then, as Tony says, you smell the kill, you go after them. They go to work on the neck of Tommy, tagging in and out, double teaming, eye gouging, letting Cornette hit him, hit him, you know, when the back's ref is turned, and eventually he gets the hot tag to Fulton. But the patience that he has as he sells the pain and that he's endured to get there just makes it like so sweet. It's just the perfect hot tag. Then we go to another level from here. And to me, like, this is where, to me, this is like already the match is incredible, but like, this is where it steps up to being like one of the best tag matches I've ever seen. Eaton knees Fulton in the back, and then he goes through the ropes, but Stanley catches him and throws him throat first onto the railing, and it's deadly.
Stanley is really good in this match. He's so aggressive, so intense.
And then he kicks out, but they choke him. And then they throw him on his neck and toss him around. They pick him up by his hair and start tossing him around. Then Cornette slays him with a racket shot right to the neck outside. And Stan, like, just can't get him pinned. They're both, like, this is a cool spot because they're both basically, like, shaking because they're he's trying to pin him so hard. Stan's trying to pin him so hard. He's shaking. You know, Fulton is powering out. It's incredible. He's bleeding. And then he kicks out of Eaton's elbow, which is awesome, of course, as always, and does a fantastic knockout sell in the corner after Stan Lane unleashing some, like, brutal-looking shots, just firing on him hard. And then Eaton starts laying in on him, too. And then I just made a note, like, literally I'm more sucked into this match as any all-timer I've ever seen while Fulton is selling the kicks from Stanley in the corner. Like, it's like another level. It's just like sometimes when you're watching a wrestling match, you realize you're watching one of the greatest that you've ever seen. And I don't know how to explain it, but as you're watching along, you just get sucked into the emotion of it so much. And then, like, that's the moment for me when I'm like, yeah, this is one of the best matches I've ever seen. And the referee almost stops the match. Fulton begs him not to. Cornette gets on the apron to argue, and Lane hits another near fatal kick, but he's also distracted and arguing. And then Eaton keeps going, but Rogers hits an exhausted missile drop kick, and Eaton falls back into a schoolboy from Fulton, and they win the titles. And then the crowd erupts, and it's the hugest pop.
It's awesome. I have a note that says, you got to see Fulton selling to believe it. And I think you really nailed it. Bobby Fulton is the man.
Dude,
Bobby Fulton is a top 100 wrestler of all time that no one talks about.
Yeah, this match is just, I would say it's in my top, probably like my top three, because tag team matches, and I guess we'll talk about another one in a minute, but it's just incredible.
Yeah, well, I think the two things I'll, because you touched upon pretty much everything I wanted to say, is one thing is how no nonsense the Midnight Express were at the beginning of this match. Like, they were just so intense. So that was really cool, and like, they keep that intensity level up throughout the night. Like you said, Stan Lane was vicious in this match, and of course Bobby Eaton's an all-time great puncher and all-time great ass kicker in the ring. The only one other thing is I am going to bring up the second half of the comedy spot you brought up. So you talked about Fulton, like, shaking the ropes, causing Lane to crotch himself, and then, like, flirting with the ladies and laying out and all that stuff. But the other element is the referee goes to give him the business, and when he's marching over there, he steps on Eaton's stomach, and it's always that always makes me laugh.
I don't even know if I caught that. That's also funny.
It's a Memphis spot. I think it was in like a lot of Pretty Young Things matches, I want to say. It's a super fun spot. But and that's what I love about the Midnight Express is there's like a little bit of something for everyone. Like, the beginning is so much fun, and then without, like, it's like a blink of the eye, because you talked about that wicked hot shot. And all of a sudden, you go from comedy and everyone's kind of like joking around to like, this is the most serious shit that's ever happened in this world. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. I mean, that, like I said, that moment in the corner when Stan Lane is throwing those kicks and Fulton is just, you have to watch it to believe it, how good of a performance it is from both of them. I mean, because the offense looks great too. If you're listening to this and you haven't seen Midnight Express versus the Fantastics Worldwide 5/14/88, go out of your way. You will not be disappointed.
Yeah, I think whenever we do Greatest Wrestler Ever again, Bobby Fulton's a lock for my top 100. And Tommy Rogers. Tommy Rogers would be a little bit lower. I know people love him for his work rate, and he is great. He's super at that spot you talked about. incredible athlete, but Bobby Fulton, he's just got so much moxie to him. I love him.
I mean, I feel like I've got a lot of, and I think you do too. I mean, I've got a lot of tag matches in my top 25.
I love tag team wrestling, brother.
Yeah. So. All right. So I guess we're up to your 11.
We're getting close to the top 10. So this is, I think, going to be a low ball for a lot of people. But for me, it's just where it is. It's NWA World Heavyweight Champion Ricky the Dragon Steamboat taking on Ric Flair. Clash of the Champions 6, 2 out of 3 falls.
Yeah, I have that one higher.
Okay, what's your number 11, brother?
My number 11, I'm going to say it quietly because I don't want my son to hear me. But it's my son's favorite match of all time. And literally, and this is no joke, gets played in my house at least twice a week for the past like 2 years. And in fact, tonight, while my 7-year-old was in Taekwondo, my 5-year-old watched this on my phone. It's Eddie Guerrero versus Rey Mysterio Jr. from 10/26/97.
Brother, I don't know how you can watch this match, like, it sounds like 100 times a year and have it lower. That's what I'm struggling to understand right now.
I think I don't know. There are so many great matches. It's hard. This is a hard thing to do.
Well, it's, maybe it's because you've watched it 100 times this year already.
It could be. You know. Yeah. We'll get into the match later. But yeah, my son has the cool Phantom Rey Mysterio action figure. It's a match that everyone in my house and in my family has seen quite a few times. And I think it's, and I'll get it. This is the only thing I'll say about it before we talk about it later, is how good of a match must this be for it to speak to so many different age groups?
That's true. That is true.
So anyway, we'll move on to your number 10.
Sorry, folks, for the abrupt ending right there, but we ended up being a runaway freight train. Originally thought the top 25 would be one entire episode, but the top 10, the elite of the elite, the cream of the crop, ended up going pretty long there, so we figured it would be best to break it up into 2 episodes. Hope you enjoyed what you listened to this week, and definitely tune in next week. It will be the last episode of the miniseries, the top 10 greatest WCW Jim Crockett promotion matches according to Justin, a.k.a. J.K. Webb, and Marty Sleaze, Superstar Sleaze. So I hope you enjoyed this episode, and take care, everybody.
Self high five.